Excuse me.
I've got one.
Oh, yeah.
There's one.
Yeah,
today's not.
Is that made today?
Oh, look
at that. No.
That's today. That's lovely.
I'm
lovely.
Everyone, amazing. By the end of 2 years,
everything will all be. You would all be sitting with one, didn't you? It'd be like a merchandising thing where we kind of cover these new hat. Yeah, oh yeah.
Sorry.
No, lovely, sorry.
You were saying what Awen meant.
Yeah.
And I caught the Wen bit, was something about Whitel.
Well, it's a peculiar word, Awen, because the word Wen in Welsh literally means white, but it's also got the meaning of holiness or purity, right? But when you put the letter R in front of something, it often is a word of negation. So it could also mean not white, not holy. Understanding about sort of the word Awen is that it's sometimes they describe it being like a flowing river, or it's sometimes like a fire that rises up, or it's sometimes like breath. So they're using words to try and describe something that words don't exactly meet. So so you've got this sort of interplay of Anun, which is the deep place, the very deep place, but it also means a place that is not a place. So it's there's a sort of paradox in it. And then there's this energy that arises out of Anun, which is Awen, which is, you could say, the holy process, or the holy breath, or the holy fire, or the holy water, which is also the unholy water, the unholy breath, the unholy fire. Right? So it's a very kind of paradoxical sort of stuff. And in a similar way, this place of kind of continual paradox and mystery, they keep coming back to this idea of the mysterious. And the relationship to time is like that, right? So on the one hand, you've got these stories that are about ancient times that are, I'll talk more technically about it tomorrow, there's a particular Welsh story that really shows this, but they're talking about ancient times as though they're now. The other thing they do is they prophesy a lot. So the other thing you find, the prophecies of Taliesin or the prophecies of Merlin. So they're also projecting forwards. And it's that same kind of edge, so that bridging place that we're talking about, which is like the being present here and now, is also a bridge between past and future. So we're somehow intuiting the movement forward, because we're intuiting that which emerges. So when Jung starts writing essays about the warning the German people about the rise of Wotan, he's in the position of being a prophet somewhere. Now, he doesn't literally know the future anymore when he has the dream about Siegfried and the tide of blood across the trenches, across the landscape, if you prefer. He didn't know there were trenches then. He doesn't literally know something is going to happen, but he feels something emerging. And in a way, when we do this kind of work, we put ourselves in that strange place where we're relating to, or from the present, relating to past, but also noticing what's emerging and therefore what's going to happen in the future. So you find often in these kind of stories, there's a lot of crossing over of time, or time is kind of quite peculiar in it. And because that's almost the nature of this place, as we sit in a way, as we come into our senses and come into the deep place and let ourselves drop down, it is like we come into a timeless place where past and present and future sort of come together. And as we come back out of it again, it's like we then kind of step back into a more linear experience of our lives. And it's like not all of it can travel back with us, because actually we're trying, it's like another dimension gets lost, right? It's like expressing three dimensions as two dimensions. So this, in a way, would be expressing four dimensions as three dimensions in the linear experience of our lives.
You completely lost me there. Sorry, I didn't get that at all.
No, I'll try and... So, when you go inside yourself, I'll do just a really simple example of it, okay? Mm. So if I just go in right now, and with how I'm feeling right now, I'm also with what I just said and our exchange just now. So I'm with the past. And if I stay with that rather than move on, if I just stay with that, I then come into what I'm doing now, which is, it's like I go down with your question, I don't understand that, so I come down into that, I come down into what I've just been saying, I let go of the flow I had, and I have to wait a bit because nothing seems to happen. And then what comes to me is, because obviously I was just sitting on the edge of your conversation when you're doing your thing. So what comes to me then is the image of you sitting with your clients, helping them make sense of the past, and your father with his, your father helping people look into the future. So if we put those two images together, what then happens?
What happens for me?
Yeah.
Well, we're both doing the same thing, we're just doing it from different directions.
Mm-hmm. And if you were to do both those things simultaneously?
I suppose one I feel I can do with certainty, and the other would have quite a high level of uncertainty.
Definitely, yeah. So if you stay with that for a moment, with the uncertainty and the certainty, mm-hmm. Okay, and just stay with both those things.
I'm being reminded of a time I got very irritated with him, mm-hmm. How he wouldn't look at, he would always look at the future with people and didn't look so much at the past with them, which mm-hmm. I felt explained how he could read the future. So we used to have big debates on that. So I used to find it very difficult to see how he could be so certain. He was very definite about the future with people,
mm-hmm.
and that always unnerved me.
Okay.
Because as far as I always feel that in the present, anything, if I make just a one different decision today, the rest of the day will be different.
Yeah.
Whereas he was able to say, this will definitely happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I always struggled with that. I also struggled because he was always right.
That's the trick, right?
And yeah. He was so good at it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I always, it unnerved me that somehow that was always mapped.
Yeah.
And he was a palmist, so he was looking at lines.
Yeah.
And I see that.
But he was reading something, okay?
Yeah.
So reading something mysterious that he was being definite about.
He was, yeah.
Okay, so there's something important in that. Not that you would do it in his way, but there's something about that.
I think what always worried me about that is that the influence that could have on some people.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and see a spiritual medium or a psychic or something, and they'll say, well, don't worry about your relationship now because in 4 years you'll meet someone new.
Mm-hmm.
But do you then think, well, I just won't bother with this one too much then because I've got that one coming. coming up, you know, I was always concerned about the influence of that.
Yeah, and I could see that could go badly wrong. But what happened for his clients? How was he a good influence for people?
Well, they loved him. Yeah, he had a huge following.
So do you think you think what he said was a bad influence for people?
Do I think it was about influence?
Do you think he influenced people in a way that wasn't okay?
I think I was always intrigued at how he lived his own life and what a paradox that was, really.
Mm.
Or a conflict. Or
conflict, sure, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think he was a remarkable man, and I think he had a remarkable gift, which he always valued, and I have great respect for that. But I don't know, there's something about you that, so my question would be, if I'm going to sit here in this group now, and I want to look at the future,
yeah.
I would hope that came from a very intuitive place.
Sure, yeah.
That by soaking up on the conversations that we just had in our group before, that somehow, I trust, will manifest in my life.
Yeah.
That experience will somehow play out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't personally want to have sat in that group of four and being told that something was going to happen.
Oh.
Because I feel that would have influenced what I would then do next. So I'm much more with the coming to than the definitive answer. Although I've hung out with many gurus and waited for their definitive answers and felt kind of relieved by them.
Oh.
But I don't know if I do that now, but I'm trying to say is I have respect for that, but I don't know if it's where I want to be.
Well, you wouldn't want to do it in that way. You'd want to do it in your own way, okay?
Yeah.
So you can hear that your dad had his own approach to that, right? Which sounds like it's very powerful. But there is something about these opposites of certainty and uncertainty. And what's the balance in that? Because it's very important to have some uncertainty, but certainty is also important sometimes, some kind of certainty. But it's tricky, right? Because actually, if you get too certain, as you say, you can kind of rely on that, turns into blind faith. It can cause all kinds of terrible things, actually, that can. On the other hand, if there's no certainty at all, you can end up paralyzed with terror and can't see a way forward at all, and that can stop you. So there's a real kind of interplay here between past, present, and future, and what do we do with that? And the thing is, it sounds like your dad, rather like Jung. You know, it's the thing that's powerful about Jung's examples, you know, which are not an individual person's examples, but of course Jung was right at a time when how could he know that? He couldn't have known it. But, you know, he's on record as having, you know, said these things. So somewhere he was right. He knew the First World War was going to come. He knew terrible devastation was going to come. He knew that the Nazi thing in a certain way was going to appear in Germany at a time when no one else could have said that. My own example of that is the Bosnian thing, where I sit watching Radovan Karadzic on television, and it's a really sympathetic kind of description of him and his world and how lovely they're singing old Bosnian songs. And I'm feeling really chilled by it and feeling something terrible's about to happen. And I don't know why I feel that. I turn out to be right about it, but I'm touching something that's trying to emerge. Which was the ethnic, you know, the energy that was going to ethnically cleanse Bosnia.
I dreamt Princess Diana's death the night before.
Did you?
Even in the
In the tunnel?
I didn't know what tunnel it was.
Right, yeah.
I dreamt the whole car sort of thing in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely frightened me to death when I turned the radio on and heard it. I was like, oh my God.
yeah, must have, yeah.
I guess in some ways that's touching into the future as well.
Oh, totally, not completely. No, that's what I mean. It's a similar sort of thing where you're touching something, right? Yeah. So you're slightly out of time. Diana is this great kind of mythic figure in the imagination as well, you know, and sort of, I mean, God knows, if you look what happened to the funeral, yeah. She ends up buried in an island in a lake, in the middle of a lake, you know, it's like, yeah. There's like something out of the Arthurian story, you have this great slow procession, flowers being cascaded on it, you know, it is a, so there was something, whatever that was about in the life of the nation, and one thing it was about was the expression of emotion, you know, it's a suddenly there were people crying and, you know, English people crying openly and sort of, and you know, so there's, there's something that we're touching here that's quite powerful and you know, where, and it touches, it also, in a very much simpler-ish area, it touches that things where we just know things in advance sometimes. Mm. We have, when our intuition tells us something or tells us something about here that's hidden or a simple thing that mostly works for me is I can feel where car parking spaces are, and so I'm really good at getting car parking spaces and sort of, and you know, it's just a silly thing a lot, so it's a very handy silly thing. It's a really, really handy kind of thing, you know, sort of, and
I call on the universe, and the universe usually provides.
Yes, indeed. But it's something about this. But there's something about that part of us that's mysterious, right? So that's the thing. And generally speaking, we don't think too much about that because it's a bit scary. Because you used to pay attention to some of these things. I start to feel a bit uncomfortable because I don't want to be an all-knowing guru, and I know I'm not. But of course, I do know things sometimes, and we all know things sometimes. And you get these intuitions that don't make sense, but if you trust them.
Is that what you were saying about that almost like tension between certainty and uncertainty? Mm. If you're completely uncertain, you're lost. If you're certain, you're fixed.
Yes, that's right.
How to hold the two?
Well, that's what we're trying to learn about, right? If you think of what, in a way, that the main thing we're learning to do in these couple of years is how to behold those opposites and stay present in them, and then trust then what happens when we do that. Right, that's the really, and because what happens is the third thing. So you have the one thing or the other thing, so certainty, uncertainty, past, future. And if we hang out with both those things in the middle, we can't command it. At a certain point, something else happens.
So Owen, in a way, is the energy that connects us.
Yeah.
So the past is here, the future's here,
yeah.
The present's here.
Yeah.
And when we go down into the place that isn't the place,
yeah.
We're touching the Owen.
Yeah.
That energy.
Yeah.
And in some ways the symbolism and the archetypes and all that stuff that comes up in the visualizations is connecting us and teaching us something that we need to know.
Yes, that's a really nice way to put it, yeah. Because that, so the Awen is that energy that rises that then takes shape in some form or other, right? So it could be anything, you know, but it's the... And that image is just there for that moment, and of course the next moment it maybe it shifts again, but it does come into form in some way. So it's that. So one of the things we can do sometimes is just to and often what we do is just dismiss that particular form and shape. And if we do that, we cut ourselves off from our connection to the Awen, because it is this flow. If we receive that shape and let it embody, and let the meaning of it come through us into our lives in some way, even be a small way, then we remain connected to the flow.
It's like touching the void.
Yeah. Kind of, yes, it is.
Reaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just work something out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've just worked it out.
Yeah.
So when I would sit with my dad,
yeah,
he would ask for something outside of himself.
Yeah.
To come to the answer that would then help him look at the future.
All right.
You're teaching us to go inside of ourselves.
Yes.
To find the answer.
Yes.
To help us with the future.
Yes.
There's no right or wrong about that, is there?
Not at all. No, it's just his way and my way. It's just absolutely...
What happens if we do both?
Now, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that would be really interesting. I think that would be really... Because that's where... It is that as well. That's right. So you'd bring in, well, it what that would be, and in fact we're going to at some point get onto that, we would bring up and bring down and stand in the middle of it and see then what happens. Right, so you invite something from outside to come in, you invite something from inside to come out, and then see what happens in the middle.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like to do that.
Well, really oddly, very oddly, again, just in terms of connectedness, I saw, when was it, Thursday, sitting down with somebody who lives locally who was really looking at the Tree of Life with me, and kind of, and what she was identifying as we sat together, and she was just visualizing this tree going down into the earth, and then she suddenly realized that actually the thing that she was forgetting to do was to go up and to bring down what was above. So she was doing the going in and down, but not reaching up and bringing in. So it's a funny thing, right? But you've just said in the same words pretty much the thing that Faye was saying to me on Thursday at pretty much the same time, right? So that's just interesting, just in terms of my life. I'm thinking, oh, that's pretty kind of interesting. Actually, Becky's just said to me what Faye said to me.
That's like the asking the universe to find your parking space.
Yeah.
And finding a parking space.
Yeah.
That's kind of an asking, isn't it? As opposed to
A going in and feeling. So yeah. There's something about doing both.
Yeah.
Right? So which is, I think, one of the really interesting things that's coming out of this discussion.
In terms of systems theory, because it seems that emergence, for me, it came out of an intuitive sense that this was systems theory was a very particular kind of vocabulary for a holistic vision.
Yeah.
And not just a horizontal vision of the universe, but that kind of
verticality.
Well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So as you were talking about that Arwen is the in a way, if you have uncertainty and certainty, and you have the sit with the opposites, and then Arwen comes up.
Yeah.
It almost seems that for me that there is something about emergence and Arwen. Do you see them as very similar? Because that sense of bringing maybe disparate objects or ideas together, creating a holding structure, and then seeing what emerges, and that kind of sense of a self-organizing system. The system itself decides what's going to happen. You can't decide and impose on the system.
You allow the system to, by aligning yourself and allowing the Awen to emerge, you allow the system then to find its own way, to find its own shape and form. But the interesting thing just about the Awen, I just had another thought about this, because of this image, this Gerald of Wales image of the Awenya, the bards, the inspired people. They had two ways of describing what happens to them. One is the image of something coming out of the cauldron, which is what I've commonly been talking about. But because they were also, Christian, they also saw it as the Holy Spirit descending on them, as the bird descending from heaven. And as you're raising something really interesting in that description of what you and your dad in that way, or what I'm saying, what your dad's saying. Because they would probably see it as doing both. They would see it as the cauldron boiling and something coming up from the depths of the cauldron. But they would also see it as inviting the Holy Spirit into them to inspire them. So they would likely be looking at both those ways of looking at something. And so and then that sort of coming together in the center of your experience, and then something new happening. And then it's interesting, this kind of discussion, because from that image you've also got, so you've got the cauldron of the mother, you've got the dove of the father, you could say. So you've got something of masculinity and femininity coming together in that. So we're touching something quite interesting here, really, I think. And that's kind of what the bards were about. They were able to integrate some very ancient, pagan, goddess-centered spirituality with the spirituality that was coming at them from Christianity, which was using a lot of very male images. And so they had One of the other images they were very fascinated by was the image of Mary and Mary Magdalene. So they used to use a lot of it. There's a lot of Welsh poetry about Mary and the cauldron of Mary, which is like a fusion of the kind of pagan and the Christian kind of image. So they were really working with both those things. So in terms of what we're talking about, I suppose this image of your dad inviting the universe in, so inviting the kind of larger universe to come down into us, and then us descending and allowing something to come into us. It's the same process, expressed in our terms. But of course it's got these quite older roots, really, which I've not thought about till just now. So that's very interesting.
There's that image of the cross as well that's there, that's the upright and the vertical.
That's right.
And the union between the two.
Yeah.
Or the standing stones that are the kind of the receiving and the and the other way of pointing.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's a very ancient thing, really, of bringing opposites together somewhere, I think. Yeah. I suppose there's something also about the whole idea of vision, or creativity anyway, where you anticipate the possible future, not defining it, but you anticipate something. So you have the vision of something that can emerge, but is also based upon where you've been in your life and where you are now. So there is something just in that very ordinary sense where you have, if you're going to envisage something, even make a plan, or even what am I going to have for dinner tomorrow, you have to put yourself in the place of connecting, of the present, connecting in a very simple way, what I had to dinner today, and I don't want to have the same thing tomorrow. So you have to somewhere put yourself in between times. It's obviously much more superficial example, but so if we're going to look in terms of our own life here and now, if we're going to look at this potential practice of descending and trusting what arises, asking and putting ourselves at the service of what comes down, then the interesting place is, well, what happens in the middle? What happens when something comes out of me and that's met by something that seems to be coming from the bigger place or the larger place?
Reading,
maybe it was the same with
that
palm reading, where part
of it is coming from out there when you turn those cards,
mm-hmm.
and then your interpretation of them is coming from in here.
Yeah, so it's a bit of both, isn't it? So there's a calling out into the universe in some ways. Please find me a parking space, or please let me help this person know the right way to go. So there's that calling out to the universe and the shuffling of the cards. And then there's a sort of that coming down into form in some way, into shape, and then something arising from within you that meets that.
And that trusting the process, trusting the universe and trusting yourself.
It's both, though, isn't it? Yes, because then you have to trust both. So you have to trust the energy outside yourself, mm-hmm. and you have to trust what's happening in you and what happens when these things come together. It's quite bright there.
I can't actually see you.
No, are you okay there? Or do you
No, I'm really enjoying this.
I was going to say
you do look like you're enjoying it. I have to say. In the full light of the sun.
I might bring my shades.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, that would look very cool, wouldn't it? Yeah. If you're there with your shades, that would look great.
Blow up
liner. And a cocktail. Cocktail would make it complete, wouldn't it? Campari and soda.
The divine and the practical, it's the opposite kind of meeting point, isn't it? You know, I need a parking space and it appears.
Yes, that's right.
Like when you're giving counselling to someone and you're asking off and you're saying, please help me, and then space business and some divine inspiration of what I'm, you know, how to help this person move forward, and that's the power of intention, isn't it? That,
well, I think that energy of intention is interesting, because actually if the intention is to align with the universe and with our deeper selves. Right, so that's kind of the intention, and to then be at the service of what happens when those two things come together, I guess. And what happens then is sort of mysterious, and it's a bit strange, and it is a bit spooky. It's like, you know, the person I was talking to on Thursday said pretty much the same thing as Becky just said to me. In the same words, right? So that's a sort of okay. I better listen to that then, right? Because that's curious, right? So Becky's never met this person as far as I know, and I don't think she's ever heard of Becky. But I on Thursday hear something from somebody, and I think, oh, that's interesting. But then when I hear it again in this context, when we're wrestling with what we're doing here, what is that? Then something very powerful happens. And it's about embodiment. It's about bringing two things together, right? Because what happens is I'm sort of rabbiting on, I'm just doing my best to describe something that's difficult. Becky really helpfully says, "I have no idea what are you talking about," right? which is great, right?
I fell right into that one.
No, it was brilliant. It was really helpful. No, it was really helpful because then I had to think, what am I talking about? And so then I had to go, okay, let's try and make this a bit more real. What about, because I'm in my flow, you know, and I'm used to talking. So I think, well, okay, what happens then? So what I literally had to do is kind of be with, okay, let's drop what I was talking about. Let's see what's real here. What's going on? Because something isn't emerging properly, right? That's what I felt. And then I hang around, and for a little while nothing happens. I think, you know, bloody hell, it's not good, is it? Nothing's happening. And this is one of the interesting things that happens, I think, when we go down into that, when we touch that deeper place, you go through this threshold place where nothing seems to happen. And of course, I think that's sort of necessary, because you have to, the preconceptions have to die in that place. Because while you're still operating from your sense of, I think I know what I'm doing, you're not actually in the place where the meeting happens. So when I'd managed to sort of get myself past that a bit, then suddenly I remembered sitting here listening to Becky talk about her way and her father's way, and this very powerful image of her and her father. And then this almost, like the two images almost getting superimposed. So the two things coming together, and I don't quite understand that. So then I just start explaining, think, well, I can't do this, so I need to talk to Becky, because it's about something of hers. So as we start to talk together, that inner mysterious thing I can't quite get starts to acquire a kind of a shape and a definition that we can start to make sense of together. And then what then happens to me is two interesting things happen. I then remember that the bards used to describe what they did in two ways. One that would be like Becky's dad and one that would be like Becky. So then I'm thinking, oh wow, this is something that perhaps they did, and that was something really important, that image of the Holy Spirit coming in. And then what happens to me is I remember then this person I saw on Thursday saying exactly the same. So as Becky then gets very clear about it and then says, well, it could be like this. I think, oh right, that's interesting. And then I remember this was said to me on Thursday. Right, so this is emergence, I think. Right, so when we talk about the emergent properties of a system, but you have to trust the unknown and be with it and struggle with it and keep somehow letting go of your formed ideas to allow it to emerge on its own terms in some way. And then it starts to acquire definition and shape and density. and more connection. So coming back to Maria's idea of Arwen connecting, as that, if you like, that breath or that energy comes in more fully into the room, more connections come with it. So it starts to then affect us all in different ways, because it starts to come into relationship. Don't know if this is making sense, yeah? So I'm just doing this on the fly, though.
Have you ever been in a situation like you were, you know, like if you're teaching or talking in some way, and you suddenly say to yourself, oh my God, who's that talking?
Yes, I know.
Where's all this coming from?
Oh, totally, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I've always had a moment where I've finished speaking and I look out and everyone's just kind of...
Yes. That happens a lot to me.
And I remember once someone recorded something I said, played it back after, I don't remember saying anything.
No, well, that's the great thing for me about recording all this stuff, because most of the time I listen to this, I'm a bit stunned, because I have no memory. I don't quite know, because you're not quite operating. It's not like you're not operating from a script. So you are touching something beyond yourself that comes through you somehow. Right, so is that, so you don't retain it in the same way, because you're sort of the conduit for it, so it comes through. And that's why it's great for me having recorded all this stuff, because I sort of catch up with myself, because I don't quite know what I've said.
How can you prepare for something like this then? I mean, it's something we were talking about as well, in terms of giving presentations or talks, and when you're trying to have an intention of embodiment and emergence and actually being with what is, but also there's the old pattern of going, I need to prepare for a week beforehand before I do something.
Well, I do it in a different way. I do need to prepare, and preparation is important, but I can't use notes, because it kills me, it takes me out of myself, and I panic. I've got notes, so I always want to say all the things I've put on the notes. So what I do when I prepare for these things, and it's like when I prepare for this, I have to feel, I sort of feel into, I mean, this is easier because we're a continuous group, so I can feel into where we are and where we're going, but even so, I still have to do that. And it's interesting in a sense, because when you let yourself do that, the universe kind of responds back. Because I was feeling for it was interesting, because I normally would have done this consolidation thing last time, but it didn't feel right to do it last time. Partly, I think, because the whole situation when Nicholas was really unresolved, and so I sort of needed something to close. So I decided not to do it last time. I just had a funny feeling like, no, this isn't right. But I did have a really strong feeling that needed to consolidate. And partly that was coming from, normally I have a sense forward of something new that comes in, or something that we're going to look at this weekend. I was getting nothing. So there was that, and I was sitting with that thinking, oh, that's strange, okay, what's going on here? And then, you know, as I felt into the whole kind of Nicholas situation and feeling, okay, that this is something important is happening here, and then I remembered that I had been intending to do consolidation, but hadn't felt right to do it. So that felt right. Then I have a conversation with Becky at a certain point in the month, where we somehow talk about something to do with consolidation and that's interesting. Becky raises it with me, I think. So that was really interesting for me. That I said, oh, well, that's what I'm going to do next weekend. And it's in the speaking of it that I really knew I was going to do it. I mean, I had sort of thought about it, intended, but I find myself telling Becky that's what we're going to do. Right. And I know that in the moment I'm telling Becky that this is going to be the big focus. I have it in mind, I must do that. But then I suddenly get that because I'm telling it to her. And then, so we do that out in relationship with each other in a way. It's something is drawn out of me by my contact with Becky in that moment. And then a few days ago, there was, just to confirm it, Susie came up to me and said, what are we doing? I don't understand what we're doing. Right, so it was sort of, you know, from different place, and you know, her particular place and her particular needs. But it sort of underlined, right? So something underlined, oh yeah, we really are going to do this. Now, obviously, the thing that you lean into when you've got an ongoing group is the sense of the ongoing group. And I'm leaning into, you know, in this case, Becky, then later Susie and Nicholas as well, and what happened there. So I'm leaning into something and sitting with it and allowing something to happen. When it's not that, when it's a talk or a group, say the group I go to in Israel, where I just want to see them once a year, so I don't have an ongoing sense of them, I sort of hang out with what I feel. So I hang out with the group or the talk or the one-off workshop or whatever it is, and then I have to feel into, I suppose I do this thing, because I also ask for help. Right, so I feel into myself, but I also do ask the wider universe, my sense of the divine, for help. So I suppose it is a bit like the dual thing, where I don't know what, mostly I don't know what to do. Right, so I'm always sitting there, what the hell am I going to do? I mean, I had a really powerful experience. I'm very helped by a powerful experience I had quite a few years ago, where I prepared this wonderful workshop for Israel. So I was really pleased with myself. Beautiful, beautifully designed. Got it all clear in my head, knew how to do it, and I was on the flight, and it was, I tell you, God help us, it was like somebody took my head off and tipped it all out. And I lost all sense of it. You know, I could technically remember what I was going to do, but I was sort of in the groove with it and feeling it and knowing I could do it. And suddenly it just made no sense at all. It was just like, it was literally like something in me or something outside me, felt like something outside me, sort of tipped it all out as a snork, and then it just turned into crap. So I actually turned out to be a really powerful week. And actually what I really needed to do with this, the Jerusalem group, was I needed to do a lot of individual work with them and group work with them. So actually we pretty much knew no structure at all other than sitting down with each other and being with whatever was going on. And in a way, after that experience, I found I never again could do planning. Not like that. I have to plan in a different way. So my planning is about hanging out with what's there. And normally what happens, I do get some form. It'll be, you know, impossible or no form at all. So I've got a sense of what needs to happen. Just like this weekend, I have the sense of consolidation's important. Coming back to basics, foundation, what are we doing here? Let's talk a lot together and explore that. So that holds me. That gives me a degree of certainty and ground. So that I can then relax into that deeper process that is about asking for help and allowing something to unfold from inside.
Who are you asking for help?
I don't know. Right, that's the other thing. But I think it would be really much easier for me if I could say I'm asking God, right? So if I don't know what I don't know what that is, right? So what am I asking? It's like something mysterious I can't put into words.
The universe?
I could say the universe, but I'm saying that because I can't think of anything else. Yeah. Right, it doesn't have any actual. If I say that, I don't know what the hell that means.
No.
Right, it is something bigger, something.
A place that is not a place.
Yeah, well, it's more like a being. It's more personal than that. It's more like a being that is not a being. Right, so I'm a bit easier. I'm easier with Anuvin because it feels like I go down into something deep and things come up from that place. Like that's a bit easier for me. But that place where I'm asking, I suppose I could use the word God, except I hate the word God because I'm a religious upbringing.
Little g.
Little g or anything, I don't know what, I don't have a word for it. So that's the kind of...
Creator.
No, not even that, I hate that. I hate the idea of a creator.
It doesn't matter,
though. It does matter and it doesn't matter. It actually, what we're putting our finger on something, it's something important. It matters because of something. It matters in me. It might not matter, right? Somebody else could feel it's the universe. If I'm asked to describe it, I often say the universe. Or the nearest thing, actually, that I've ever come to it is a Native American phrase called the great mystery or the mystery. So it feels like, but it feels personal, right? So it's like I'm asking something that's not a human being, but feels like it's got a capacity to love or something, or care, anyway, care. And I'm not sure about, I'm always a bit irritable asking this place, because I don't know if I'm asking anything, is there something there? There's always this little dialogue going on, I don't know if you're there, but please help if you can, or, you know, it's like that agnostic prayer, please God, if there is a God, help me save my soul if I've got a soul. But it's pretty much that kind of territory, right? So I don't kind of know. But what is real is that asking for help. And that please help me. It's that. The nearest thing I've ever come to this in my own life, there's a Christian mystical work called The Cloud of Unknowing. And the bits of it I don't like, but actually the fundamental bit of it is that, not medieval book, but what the writer says is that if to get, and it's called about getting close to the divine. If you want to get close to the divine, you have to go into the cloud of unknowing. And he says there that the best prayer you can have is a single word. And he said, you might use the word God, or you might use the word love, or you might use the word help. and it's a kind of remarkable little book, this. I mean, it's all couched in theological language. It's not an easy book to read. But at the heart of it, so actually what speaks to me is that word help. So it's like I go into the cloud of unknowing and I say help. And then but then what I have to do is really be in that cloud and let myself be helped. And that's the surrender. That's the surrender place. Yeah.
When you do that, it is something coming down.
Yeah.
But by doing that, you're saying that you're allowing something to arise that you've been blocking before.
Well, no. I think it's the other. I think it's that something coming down. I'm easy with the place coming up, right? Yeah. That I don't have issues with. I don't struggle with that in the same way, because that feels like it comes up from inside. I'm very comfortable in that world. I guess most of us who are therapists are, you know, you learn to do that. It's sort of check it out with that. But the idea that there's something outside myself that helps me freaks me out a bit. A bit too real, a bit too like my religious upbringing. Right, it's my edge, right? It's an edge for me in a way the other isn't. I'm, you know, I can feel something coming from inside, that's okay. But when I ask for help, it's accompanied with a sort of, well, sort of invitation. I'm having to do that. I'd prefer not to do that.
I'm the opposite. It's really good. I find it really hard going into myself.
It's interesting, isn't it? How
we're
different.
Yeah. Really hard.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah. But asking for help.
I can't remember not doing it since I was a small child.
It's interesting how we develop these things, isn't it?
I don't know what that is. Like you.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways I was lucky. I wasn't brought up in it, so I haven't got any hang-ups about religion. But on the other hand, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I didn't say what you're asking about.
Yeah.
See, I think we care who you ask for help from. Because I always remember Randa said that just because somebody's died doesn't mean they've become enlightened.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
The
yeah.
The sizes are here.
Totally.
I always kind of remember that. Yeah.
I am.
He used to say to me, so who are you asking for help from?
Yeah.
I said, that's a very interesting question. So, yeah. If it's someone that's died, is it because they had some level of wisdom in this life, and therefore
yeah.
I hope I might be able to tap into it still in the other? It was about how to apply wisdom to that unknown place, isn't
yeah.
it? So it's kind of like be careful what you channel, it's like be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, that's right.
So there still has to be that level of trust, doesn't yeah,
that's
internally,
true.
Internally, to say, whatever I'm tapping into, I've got a trust, but it's more of a letting go.
Yeah, that's right.
Because in here, we can sink into it, can't we? We can
yeah.
sit in it, and we kind of know it pretty well, so we've hung out with it for however old we are.
Yeah.
But here, there's something about having to trust what you're allowing in.
Yes, that's right.
The help to come from.
That's right, and it's a big thing, you know, so there's... I mean, so in a way, you know, what the bards would have said, this was what the writer of The Cloud of Unknowing would have said. Actually, you have to be, they talk about this idea of discerning the spirits. You have to be careful, a bit like Ramdas has said, you have to be just a bit careful, you have to, and check it out a bit and see who you, but then when you have found that which is trustworthy, that which really works, then let yourself go into that too. So you have to learn then to surrender to God or the mystery or the... whatever it is, you know, so that, you know, the bards would have called it the Holy Spirit, I suppose, you know, which would have had some meaning for them. And in some ways, some of their ways of describing it are like this fiery dove that comes into them, because that's their image. It doesn't have to be our image. You have to find your own images in this, I think, really, and let that image emerge for you.
It's almost about getting out of bed, isn't it, really? Is that? Because in some ways...
It is that, but it's... There's ways of doing that that are just okay, that I'm fine with, right? I can do that when I'm going beneath my head into my intuition. I'm really fine. It's to do with the difference of going inside and inviting the help from outside, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the bit. It's the bit that, oh my God, is this real? You know, if the help comes from inside, I'm obviously more comfortable with that. If the help is coming from outside, so I ask, you know, God, for whatever better word, for help, and I'm given the help and I'm responded to. And I do, you know, I have experienced that, I think, quite a lot of times. It freaks me out. I'm not in control. I feel more in control of things inside myself, I think, to be honest, because I'm just comfortable with that process. But the inviting in of the help and the trusting and the surrendering into that, that frightens me a bit, I think.
That's what I meant more about not being a control freak and having to. It's about letting go. It's a bit.
Yeah. But I guess from what you were saying, then your issue might be. So I've got that issue, right? Which is that you sound like you're really comfortable with that asking for help and letting that come in.
My issue is trusting myself.
Yeah. So your issue is the other way around, right? So when I'm getting freaked out by asking for help, you sound like you're cool with that, you're fine with that. But actually, more difficult for you might be that place of going in and then trusting what comes out from inside you. And in a way, that's the point of all this. We're all different, and we can help each other by exploring our differences together. Because that way, that gives us a sense of that kind of wider field. Of, okay, right, we're all, you know, that's the way we can help each other, actually, I think.
For someone who knows.
Where do you think that comes from? And why has it worked for so long? And why can't I do it?
And why haven't you marketed it?
I think it's because, if I'm honest with that one, it's because it doesn't freak me out too much. It's handy. It does freak me out a bit. And it's like, I think the key to this is in allowing flow. I get clients because angels bring me clients. That's the other thing I've learned. Mm. I freak out about it a lot, Ali will tell you. I'm sort of half the time I'm saying, well, I'm doomed, it's all falling apart. I knew this psychotherapy thing would never work. those of you who sit with me, those of you who have to be telling you, oh, you could trust me, not actually my own, Ian's own life at times. I've only been doing this 20 years. I knew it would never work. Hopeless. Right, so periodically, I go on one of these, a client, one client leaves and that's it. I knew it would all go downhill. I'm getting old as well and nobody wants me now. So, you know, there's a whole little thing that comes. And yet, I didn't...
It's not that funny when you do it.
Oh no, I'm sure it's not that funny when you do it. I'm not in it right now. I'm being humorous. But when I'm in it, I'm in it. Right? It is not a laugh or not. I am convinced, and I want to convince the world around me that, you know, it's time to apply for a job at B&Q. They take on older blokes, don't they? I could just work there. We've got to be included in their class to be. Right, so that's my paranoid kind of state. But actually, I don't do any advertising at all for clients. Right? And when I have done advertising, it's gone really badly. It doesn't work. Advertising, you know, so that I had a huge spell of doing advertising. I was so crap at it. And the people, I either attracted nobody or I attracted really mad people where everything went but really wrong. So one of the things I've learned, that when I'm not in my most paranoid places, that actually what happens is I have to ask the universe, God, angels, whatever we call them, to bring me clients. That's the only thing that works for me. And it does work, but it freaks me out every time. So the other part of that spin-off...
You get surprised.
I get surprised all the time, and I get a bit freaked by it, to be honest with you, entirely honest with you, right? So part of that place where I'm convinced everything is going to go wrong is I'm trying to find solidity. Mm. Now, from my past, my childhood, it's all about depression and things going wrong. I come from this incredibly depressed, insane family. So what feels familiar and solid is that. So I can be one moment, so when I'm faced with a client leaving, right, I'm faced with, or maybe more than one client leaving, I'm faced with the opening up of space, I'm faced with that need to call out for help. And sometimes I can manage that and hold that, and that's, and that is okay. But other times I can't handle the tension of it, and I spin off into that, oh fuck, it's all going wrong. I knew it would.
I don't think you're alone in that.
No, I'm sure I'm not alone, but it's that place we seek a solidity in that, right? So what I'm doing in that, so I'm trying to find, I'm scared actually of the place of opening up to help and inviting it in. I'm scared of the help coming, actually, in me, because it really shows me that there's something real there. Yeah. And I'm really in relationship with something, and that really, well, part of me quite likes that, another part of me is really scared of that. And I'd rather seek refuge in the place where it's all going to go wrong and I better start to send him a CV to B&Q.
It's about being afraid of your own power, really.
It's not, it's afraid of the power of the universe. It's afraid of God, we could say that, right? Whatever that the hell that means. Not afraid of my own power, I'm quite good at that. In fact, places where... But it's the connecting to something else, something bigger than me, something outside of me, something that is loving. That really quite frightens me. And when it works, it's frightening, right?
I was in therapy one afternoon and I said, I need some more clients. I've got some more clients.
Yep.
She said, ask the universe. I said, I've asked the bloody universe. You know, all that stuff.
Yep.
Get home.
Yep.
There's two messages.
Yep.
Clients. They both joined me and it's like, I went back the next week. I said, I don't want any more clients. You know, it's scary.
It's scary. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's absolutely what happens.
You can just ask them. Yeah.
And they turn up. It's genuinely scary. And that's the problem, right? Mm.
Do you think that that's something that, because where it sits in your life as well.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I've got supervisees from Totnes, and, you know, some of them, I don't even know what it is they do. But, you know, they're wanting to offer something, and I've tried really hard to work out what it is they're actually doing.
Okay.
And you know, and they're kind of, you know, and the one woman, she's a lovely, lovely, lovely person, and she kind of, but again, she's kind of, well, I've sat in my room and I've put my message out there, and nothing's happening. And actually, I kind of think to her, and I don't want to put her off doing that, and that's a lovely thing for her to do. But I think there's something about where she is in her life and how it connects.
Yes, exactly. But it's also the fact that you don't know what she's doing, right? Mm-hmm. So somewhere there's a vagueness there. Right. There's a place of... Because actually what happens, I think, in these moments, we get clear. The request is a clear... And you're in yourself when you're making the request and you surrender that. So there's something about your will gets aligned. So there are these two energies, I think, about will and imagination that are pivotal to what we're talking about. Right, so that we have to kind of get clear in that will place, where what? Go on.
I just think sometimes things tend to happen to me sometimes, and I don't tend to have a sense of will.
Yeah.
But they happen.
Yeah.
So like, oh, I've gone on holiday by mistake.
No, but that's what we're. But
I've done this by mistake.
Real will is not conscious like that. It's not
right.
When we talk about will, we think about conscious will. We're talking about something that's much deeper than that. That is much more like alignment, and so the place where you come to and God, I need more clients, right? That's something. That's not coming just from the top of your mind. That's coming from quite a deep place inside. So that's where something in this will place gets really engaged. Now, will, I think, is a mysterious energy. That's the other thing we need to explore as we go on with this. What people mean by will normally is just that conscious, I want. But actually, real will is something much deeper, much more mysterious. And it's something that connects the inside and the outside, and something does really happen when that gets engaged.
I'll tell you the other time when that happens is when you start closing your practice.
Yeah.
Close your practice, and they all own up onto the therapist.
Well, I think that's
no time is there.
No, but that's the other. But that's the other thing that happens because you're being challenged there. Because I think what happens when you get aligned, there's some. So one of the things that happens is things happen. The other thing that happens is you often get challenged in that place, which kind of almost tests that place of will or kind of resolution.
First time I sort of thought, oh, maybe I should take it, maybe. And it's like, no, come on, maybe. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's right.
And about the sixth one, I was able to say no, sorry.
Great, excellent.
Well, nothing happens, I suppose, in some cases like your lady, that might be fear getting in the way.
Well, it might even be that, see, what's interesting, what Leo said that's interesting to me is that you sit with these people and you're not really sure what they're doing. So there's something not present in...
Oh, totally not present.
And so nothing's going to happen there. Because that isn't a message, that isn't... Because this...
My sense is she's very connected to something.
Yeah. But it hasn't come through. Mm. Right? So there's someone, it's not quite embodying. So, because you... So, because if it was embodying, you'd have more of a sense of it.
Yeah.
So if you haven't got more of a sense of it, how is anybody else going to get a sense of it? How is anybody going to come? If you're actually sitting with it, you can feel something. So there's some potential there. So it's not that she's off on the wrong track by the sound of it, but something hasn't happened.
She's not a career student, is she?
No, she's kind of one of these people that she floats and drifts, so she's done a little bit of healing, and she's done a little bit of counselling, and she's done a little bit of reiki, and she's done a little bit of this, and she went there and she did some of that. And it's like there's something really trying to
come through.
And she said, you know, I want to set up a practice, and I'm there, well, doing what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, not as bluntly as that, but...
Yeah.
You know, if I say, well, you know, tell me about this practice that you're setting up, she talks for 10 minutes, and I haven't got a clue what she's doing.
No, and that, of course, is why it won't happen, because it hasn't embodied in her. And of course, you're good at helping people build practices, you know, because, you know, so, and if you can't feel it, of course, the rest of the world is not going to feel it. Excellent. Well, let's just stop because we're a little past time. So,
can I just say, did you know that Karuna's thinking of moving away from BACP?
Already? thought they only just joined them, didn't they? Well, that's rapid.